Alrighty, how we doing, people? Welcome to the show. Today, we start over in Chicago, where I discuss how shootings are actually down in the city this past weekend, even with 1,200 total shootings this year so far. And shootings are actually down so far this year. I then take us into the investment world and analyze if gold is a good investment right now. We then head to Miami, where the city is starting to gear up regarding planning for the FIFA World Cup they're hosting, where they'll be getting a few matches. Then we bop over to the education sector and analyze the trend that is beginning to take over college campuses and universities, all here on the Bullock today, so let's do it. How we don't know more about this stuff is insane.
This is unbelievable.
Let's see. I'll take a wild guess.
Wait. How do you know that?
The shootings are out of control. This is wild.
No one is talking about this.
That's the craziest part about it all, man.
All right. So we're going to start over in Chicago today as we recap another weekend of shootings with a total amount of 22 separate shootings between Friday and Sunday night, leaving 29 victims shot with 4 being fatal. From someone who does this week after week, I look in the Chicago shootings over the weekend. This is what I would say about the average weekend is in Chicago. You know, come 4th of July, sometimes the amount of shootings rack up to about 100 shootings in that one weekend. But with slower weekends, usually in the wintertime, because less people are out with Chicago's frigid temps, the numbers can trickle down to about less than 10 on a weekend. The victims' ages range between this weekend, 16 years old and 62 years old, with nearly 1,200 shootings on this year to date, which is actually down in comparison to the same time span in 2024, which had a whopping 1,778 total shootings during the same time period. And it's kind of sad because, you know, a couple weeks ago when I analyzed the shootings from Chicago in the weekend, CBS Chicago actually gave like a very nice itemized depiction of each individual shooting and even in some cases giving the names of the victims. Most of the time, though, I could say like out of my like year and a half of doing this and looking in the Chicago violence over the weekends, most of the time, it's just like a 2-paragraph list of the total amount of shootings and no one's names are even mentioned, which is so beyond sad that nobody's really getting any coverage like that, you know? But into the investment world now, as gold bars is crushing it once again. Gold wrapped up its 7th week straight of gains, hitting an all-time high of just over $4,000 an ounce, bringing its yearly advance to over 47%, which is absolutely unheard of. Recent interest rate cuts and a weak dollar are seen as the ongoing drivers, with more expected rate cuts come later this year. It's expected come later October and in December, which might hint to even higher gains for gold this year. Gold is set to become Australia's second most valuable resource export after iron now. And it's expected that gold demand is likely to increase given its edge against inflation and with a globally unstable political climate. I do agree, but I would say that a time to never buy something is when you just read an article that it states just hit record highs. That's your first indicator to sell, which I think a lot of people take, which is why when things hit record highs, you know, there's typically a pullback because people are trying to sell and cash out. You know, it's obviously a symptom of people pulling back. Another concern is that all I see are news articles when I research this about gold bars being the smart buy right now. And in my experience, whenever the legacy media picks these investments to publish, you've typically lost out on the window to buy and they're just trying to pump as much FOMO into future buyers as they can. And then boom, the rug pulled out from under you. And honestly, I mean, just after the basic economic rule that states buy low, sell high, the second rule behind that is never buy when it's at an all-time high. On the college campuses now, all across the country, a humongous trend that went from silently sweeping across the country's youth to now openly and brazenly shaking up the college world. It's not completely unexpected, though. OnlyFans, if you didn't know, and don't pretend like you don't, start off as a subscription-based platform to allow artists and creators to sell pieces of their content to their most committed and loyal fans on the site. It quickly became overran with people, predominantly women, selling nude content to their subscribers, aka their customers, predominantly men. The site has now fully infiltrated the college culture scene, with many, many, many younger women looking to capitalize by leveraging their image and looks to make as much money as they've been hearing you can make, which the headlines show are mega millions of dollars. Take Sophie Rain, for example. A 20-year-old former waitress just pulled in $76 million on the platform, with one individual subscriber alone spending about $4.7 million on her content from just one guy. But just starting out, most creators find themselves in a few hundred dollars a month at best in a revolving circle. The site alone brought in a whopping $7.2 billion last year. To put that into perspective, OnlyFans topped the NHL's $6.3 billion in revenue, with the NBA just inching out OnlyFans at approximately $11.3 billion in revenue. OnlyFans are likely to overtake the NBA in total revenue by the year 2030 at this rate and crush them, with the next sports league in line being the NFL. These success stories, and I'm talking a whopping, life-changing amount of money in a short period of time without, you know, ever considering having to go to prison for it. When people think of, you know, getting money very quickly in a short period of time, usually you're doing something illegal. This is not illegal. But that short period of time, a lot of money, is driving a lot of women to start doing this, especially when many of their friends are doing it as well, thus normalizing it, emerging as the top side hustle on college campuses right now. Also, the sheer high scale, unlimited wealth potential seem to most people creating content on the platform outweighs the obvious short-term and long-term risks, which are also very real. I mean, the internet is one entity that does not forget. And if I know one thing, it certainly does not delete. This would be the very definition of a high-risk, high-reward business model. One similar to the mafia. You know, once you are committed, you are never getting out. But in all seriousness, unlike the mafia, where you are at least out of the game after you die, with porn, even after your death, your nude images are very much still alive and will outlast you. People always say, you know, your kids one day will see this. And it's like, it's going to be your grandkids as well and all of their friends at their disposal, at their demand, whenever they want. You know, it's kind of like having to digitally look over your shoulder 24/7. And I've got to think that eventually, at some age, you know, some realization kicks in that you do not have control over your life and how some of the most intimate images of yourself are completely out of your control for how they're being used. Which I think, you know, even on the most fringe mindsets on this issue, have to be concerned about that. On college campuses, though, it's become normalized, which is why it's starting to take off. Rock Jacobs, director of a documentary called Lonely Fans, stated that in 2023, women would generally keep their OnlyFans accounts a secret. But now it's become even more normalized, with people even putting in their own the link to their own OnlyFans in their own Instagram bios, where their families and friends that they grew up with and have followed them, and aunts and uncles, also follow them on. So you can see the shame level start to disintegrate here. And the result, more people see that there is less shame and a possible jackpot sitting at the end of a digital rainbow, and boom, you get the numbers that we see today. You know, in April of 2020, the site saw approximately 200,000 new users daily, with 8,000 new creators daily. In 2021, the site grew to $3 billion in revenue and continued its rapid growth, capping off last year in 2024 with a total of 4.6 million creators and 377 million OnlyFans account, with roughly 1.4 million of these creators being American women. Making an even further astounding stat that 2% of all American women aged between 18 and 45 are creating content on the platform. I'll say it again. 2% of all American women aged between 18 and 45 are creating content on the platform. OnlyFans CEO Keely Blair said in a statement, "We expanded in new verticals, demonstrating the strength and potential of the platform across a wide variety of genres, with a number of significant brand and individual partnerships, particularly in sport. OnlyFans continued to enhance its reputation as a foundational element of the wider creator economy." So, in layman's terms, they specialize in porn. You know, and this is, you know, rocking, I mean, every single industry across every single social institution in the country. I mean, if you're a Sopranos lover, for example, actor Drea De Matteo, you know, who played Christopher's girlfriend, Adriana, in the show, who ends up being killed after becoming a rat, in case, you know, spoiler alert, in case anybody, you know, didn't watch The Sopranos yet, that would still like to watch it. She does die after snitching. She made a quick $50,000 shortly after joining OnlyFans, with charging $15 as a monthly subscription. And really why this is booming, to be real here, men in college, and honestly everywhere, really, but college especially, are constantly falling on their faces, slipping on their own drool as they're blindly chasing women. Right now, those women are turning around and saying, you know, how about I sell you a few sexy photos for $5.99, maybe a video for $15.99. And let's stop kidding ourselves, really. For the price of a Big Mac, you can have almost on-demand nude exposure of the person you are highly attracted to. And $15.99 is far less than taking someone out on a date and comes with immediate satisfaction with no risk of failure. And what I'm explaining here is, in other words, it's becoming easier to satisfy the immediate draw that usually initially brings most young people together, while also monetizing on that. OnlyFans is booming because it's defying basic economics. Usually when there is a high supply, there is a low demand. And when there's a high demand, there's a low supply. And OnlyFans has a high supply with a high demand. And with that level of market equilibrium, you end up getting these insane stories like Sophie Raines, who only charges a mere $10 a month to view her content and makes three times more money a year than Aaron Rodgers does. She out-earns James Harden each year and is just shy by about $2 million a year in even outperforming three-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Which, if the year for Sophie last year, if she has any growth this year, and looking at Patrick Mahomes' year, how his football season's going this year, if that continues, she will out-earn Patrick Mahomes in the next year. So we're talking about serious money, people. Which is why more and more people are starting to take the bait. I also know how deep-rooted this industry goes as being down here in Miami myself, which is the OnlyFans capital of the world. You know, you run into a ton of these people here. A study of the site and from viewing location-based data from creators, Madhouse Labs was able to find out that 1,110 out of every 100,000 residents has an OnlyFans account. From personally viewing people's pay stubs during their income checks when they were applying for apartments when I used to be a corporate slave in the real estate industry, I used to see these applications come in as much as in New York City when people apply for apartments, they work in finance. And down here in Miami, it was just as prevalent that they end up being in the porn or OnlyFans industry. So guys, honestly, almost everyone is doing this right now or actively considering doing it or have considered doing it once before. I can't tell you how many people that I personally even went, I mean, I'm sure you guys are too, went to high school with and college who like have these links to their OnlyFans in their Instagram bios where like their aunts and uncles and family and grandma and mom and dad all follow them on their Instagram. You know, and this stems because, you know, the younger generations are starting to see that, you know, the two, I would say, most awful but truthful words in business, you know, speak volumes, which is sex sells. And now down here in Miami, as the Magic City prepares for another world spotlight moment, hosting a few of the 2026 FIFA World Cup matches, Miami-Dade is expecting up to 1 million visitors, attributing to $1.5 billion in an economic impact from the matches alone, with Mayor Suarez referring to next summer as hosting seven Super Bowls in one single month. One of the matches will include the third-place finale for the World Cup, including the other matches being slated to occur at the Hard Rock Stadium between June 11th and July 19th. The second phase of ticket buying for the World Cup will be available at the end of October. Soon after the soccer matches conclude, the city will host the International Meeting of World Leaders, aka the G20 Summit, in Doral at Donald Trump's International Golf Course in December of 2025, which will be the first time the U.S. has hosted the summit since 2009. It'll obviously be a chaotic year for the city. I mean, they've got their hands full, as the city is also slated to elect a new mayor next month, which will obviously be a humongous year for the new mayor being thrown onto the international level in their very first year. I mean, Miami's, they've got a lot next year coming on their plate because with all of that happening, I mean, I just, you know, you're talking from June 11th to July 19th, the amount of traffic that is going to be, have Miami backed up for more than a month is going to be insane. There is no public transportation in the city of Miami that can even remotely help lessen the burden of that over a month time frame. I mean, it is going to be absolutely chaotic, to say the least, and you're going to spend more time in your car than you are actually at your destination when you get there. if you consider your to and from. I do think that Miami will do well, though, other than that, hosting these matches, other than the grave conditions that the highways will be. You know, just because they did host the final match of the 2024 Copa America, as well as two group stages earlier in that tournament, which was almost just as big. And I'm sure they learned from any of their mistakes that they had during that time. So, I mean, it will be a really, really exciting year. You know, especially got the G20 summit at the end of the year. And I can only imagine what the issues they're going to be talking about at that G20 summit, which none have probably happened yet. I doubt they'll still be talking about Israel and Gaza over there. I doubt they'll still be talking about Russia and Ukraine. I mean, it'll be a shame if they do, just considering the sheer amount of lives that would be lost in those two conflicts between now and then.
But no politics.
No politics. Yes, yes. And now a brand new episode of the No Politics podcast, guys, will be out this coming Friday at 6 a.m. with the executive director of Coffee Watch, Itel Higone, which is a nonprofit that's essentially an international watchdog that ensures poor farmers and laborers that work throughout the coffee industry all across the world are treated humane and fairly. That episode will be out this Friday at 6 a.m., wherever you get your podcasts, and I will see you then.